It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Stephanie Kuo. The city of Dallas today shut down the downtown shelter where Hurricane Harvey evacuees have been staying. At one point, the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center hosted more than 2,500 people. About 220 people who remain are moving to the Tommy Allen Recreation Center in Oak Cliff. Mayor Mike Rawlings today praised the 24/7 shelter efforts over the past month.
Over 86,000 meals served, 127 job offers on the spot. Walmart assisted 2,600 patients with 3,200 prescriptions. It was just remarkable.
Rawlings says 100 evacuees, now homeless because of Harvey, have decided to relocate to Dallas. They'll be helped by the mayor's disaster relief fund, which has more than $1 million in it. Fort Worth and Irving also recently closed their shelters for Harvey evacuees. Hurricane Harvey is the focus of a special issue of Texas Monthly on newsstands tomorrow. The title, Unsinkable, How We Defied Hurricane Harvey. Tim Talafiero is Texas Monthly's editor-in-chief. He talked with David Brown, host of Public Radio's Texas Standard.
Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invite.
One of the stories of many that stuck out to me was the Voices from the Storm. How'd you go about finding these people and identifying, you know, who it is you're going to talk to while the storm is going on, it sounds like?
It was a team effort. We put about a dozen people on it, and we broke it into portions of the state because we were trying to tell the whole story of the storm, not just Houston or not just Port A. And so we had people calling, and every time they'd call someone, they'd ask who else they should talk to. And before you knew it, we had about 60 or 70 voices that was the raw material that we were working from.
Some of these stories, I mean, chills. Or were there a couple that stuck out to you?
Perhaps the most chilling one is Holly Hartman. She's a journalism teacher in Houston Memorial High. And during the storm, of course, there's no school. So she wants to help. She volunteers to serve as a dispatcher for the Cajun Navy. Of course, all these guys are coming in to help.
These are volunteer boaters that come out into the...
And she gets this call at 3 a.m. from a young boy who sounds desperate. She doesn't quite know what's going on, but come to find out, the boy's brother and cousin were in the backyard near a metal shed, and they were electrocuted. And this kid is on the phone screaming, "What do I do? What do I do? Do I do CPR?" And she can hear the sloshing of the water and the desperation of people screaming, and she's trying to do anything she can. She says, "Yep, please try CPR." Well, come to find out, you know, those kids didn't make it. They couldn't get somebody out there in time. And it wasn't until 12 hours later that they could recover the bodies.
It's just a gut punch when you realize not just the tragedy of this, but that in a way this is just one window of this tragedy. And furthermore, that you find these regular, ordinary folks are just sort of thrust into these situations they never would have imagined finding themselves in the first place.
And it shows some of the poignancy of all this, that she has this feeling that she wants to help, and what does she encounter is this absolutely desperate situation beyond anything that she can address.
There's another that you point to, a gentleman in Victoria, Texas.
Yeah, a chef, a guy named James Cantor. And when the storm starts to really come in, he decides to move his family into his restaurant in Victoria. They literally set up a tent in the restaurant. And as it kind of goes through and blows over, he starts cooking because, well, you're a chef. First thing he cooks is this giant pot of smoked kimchi and chicken stew because his wife, who's half Korean, that's what her mother used to make.
So it's like comfort food.
It was exactly comfort food. Word starts to get out over time that this guy is cooking food. People from the Victoria Advocate who'd been working around the clock start to show up, and then first responders. And before you know it, he decides to kind of just open up the restaurant.
He's cooking for an entire city, really.
Yeah, he turns on Willie Nelson and says he just wanted to kind of restore a sense of normalcy for everyone in that extraordinary time.
What do you think these stories bring to what we understand and what we know about what happened with Harvey in Texas?
I think we tried to capture both the devastation and the response to that, because you don't want to make it all gloom and doom. There was a lot of that, but there was also a lot of real heroism, and you saw the human spirit really come alive in real ways. And so we tried to capture both of those as a snapshot of this is really what happened during the storm, and this is how it should be remembered.
That was Tim Taliaferro, Texas Monthly's editor-in-chief, talking with David Brown, host of Public Radio's Texas Standard. A team of researchers at the University of Texas at Arlington is working to identify and fight fake news, with a focus on Twitter bots. Professors Chang Kai Lee and Mark Tremaine are on the team that's funded by a UT Austin grant. They talked with KERA's Justin Martin.
Gentlemen, thanks for being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
First off, Professor Tremaine, how do you as researchers define fake news?
Certainly in the social media era in the last year or so, the term started off to describe things that people would post on Facebook or other social networks that looked like news stories, but then checked out to be either partly fictitious or entirely fictitious. So I think that's the current use of the term. And then, of course, the president decided to adopt the term to apply to traditional media.
Now, Professor Lee, this research your team is working on has an interesting twist. It's not the fake articles that grandma is sharing on Facebook. Your focus is on national security. I'm curious, how does fake news affect national security?
We have now learned from various authorities, including, I think, FBI, that Russia was behind the Twitter bots that spread fake news during the election last year. And those Twitter bots may have had an impact on the election results. That's very significant in terms of national security.
How can you tell fake news from the real stuff?
One thing is to see how that news is being spread. Where does that story track to when you start to trace its typically internet lineage? Can you trace it back to where it starts? And that might give you a clue as to whether it's real or not. Are the accounts that are spreading this on, say, Twitter, are those accounts automated accounts, what we call bots, or are those, you know, real accounts that an actual single person runs? And that can give you a clue as well.
It's not something that is easy to tell sometimes. There are situations when people just make outright false claims, but they are also very tricky and delicate claims. You can twist the numbers. You can, you know, try to mislead people.
A good conspiracy theory is one that has some facts woven into it, right? If you go to check out this conspiracy theory and you start checking some things and some of those things check out, it lends credibility to the whole thing. So some of the things that are being spread online are cleverly done so that pieces of them do check out. And it makes the whole thing seem like, well, this is believable if you can check certain things and certain things are actually true.
How will the algorithm that you're creating, the software that you're creating, how will it work?
There are a few things that we should look into. We need to know who posted fake news tweet originally and what has been on the path of this tweet, you know, who has spread the tweets and so on, and who are the followers, right? They all have a track record. We can sort of build profiles for all these different Twitter accounts that spread fake news. We can also look at the content. If someone just repeated a claim that has been checked by fact-checking organizations, professional fact-checkers, then we can say, oh, this has been checked. It's not really true.
To sum that up, you'd say every Twitter account, whether it's a human account or a fake account, has two characteristics. One is the content that it puts out, and the other is the connections, the people that are following that account or that that account is following. And so we would have to set up a system that looks at the content, and if you know some accounts that we know are fake and we can look at that content, we can learn things from that content that help us detect future fake accounts. And then the same thing is true with the connections. If we know the kinds of connections that a fake account has, that can be used to help you detect a future fake account by the connections it has.
We can call the project success if we are able to tell you, given a Twitter account, whether that's an account backed by a computer program focused on spreading fake news or not.
Gentlemen, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was KERA's Justin Martin talking with UT Arlington professors Cheng Kai Lee and Mark Tremaine. In the forecast, there's a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms later tonight in Fort Worth and Denton. In Dallas, mostly clear with a low around 78. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.